If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
Of the statewide positions in Missouri, Lieutenant Governor is one that isn't exactly perceived as exciting. However, the position goes beyond being next in line for the governorship. On this episode of Politically Speaking, Richard Brown, the Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor, joins the show to talk about his candidacy. Brown has served the past 8 years in the Missouri House, and he says he's decided to run for Lieutenant Governor because he wants to be an ambassador for the state. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio's State House and Politics reporter, Sarah Kellogg. Joining me in studio, he is St. Louis Public Radio's political correspondent,
Jason Rosenbaum.
And joining us today via Zoom, he is the House Representative for the 27th District in Missouri, and he is the Democrat running to be the next Lieutenant Governor.
Well, good morning, Sarah. Hello, Jason. Good to be here. This is Richard Brown.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Let's get right into it, into your candidacy. You were termed out of running for another 2 years in the Missouri House of Representatives. And instead of riding off into the sunset, you decided to run for Lieutenant Governor. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, during my time in the legislature, I've come to the belief that for too long, the needs of Missouri families have been ignored. So I'm running on a campaign that's designed around working with Missouri families, okay? Doing things like increasing the number of affordable housing units in the state, trying to eliminate the state tax on food and groceries. These are basic things that Missourians need.
And you had one other opponent in the race for the primary, but you won pretty easily. How do you anticipate changing your strategy from primary to the general election in November?
Well, I'm just focused on doing the same things I've been doing all along, talking with folks, and working with trying to improve the lives of everyday Missourians.
Well, speaking of primaries, the Republican primary for Lieutenant Governor turned out to be quite interesting. It was believed that Senator Lincoln Huff of Springfield was the front runner, but he did not win. Instead, David Wassinger, who has never been elected to anything before, won the primary by a small margin. What did you end up making of that very crowded Lieutenant Governor primary on the Republican side?
Well, as anyone knows, when you have a crowded field, anything could happen. It was quite a surprise to me as well as to many people across the state. But again, this was the will of the people that voted in that primary. And so now I know who my opponent will be in the general election.
When we will be having David Wassinger on the podcast later in September, but does the fact that he won the primary change your strategy at all? Were you planning on running against Senator Huff and now you have to like reconstruct everything that you were going to do, or is your plan basically the same?
Well, I'm just going to continue moving forward with what's been working for me, which is just talking to people, understanding their needs, and trying to work on their behalf.
Being elected as a Democrat statewide right now in Missouri is a little bit of an uphill battle. So why do you think that you're the candidate who can bring together the urban, suburban, and rural coalition the Democrats need to piece together in order to win?
Well, it's very simple. I hold those Missouri values. People in this state, they have common sense. There are things that are going on with our state government that seem to interrupt business. Now, in the time that I've been in Jefferson City, I've always tried to work positively with members of both sides of the aisle. We've managed to get some good things done in the legislature, things that I've worked on, for instance, the first-time homebuyers savings program, which is very similar to a MOST program. It allows people to save for a home in Missouri. They can earn tax credits while they're saving this money. And, you know, we're giving folks a chance to build equity, to have something that's their own. These are the type of things that I work on. Last session, you know, I worked with a Republican to get the multi-employer state savings program put in place so that folks have a opportunity to save for retirement. This is critical. A lot of folks don't have retirement savings, but you know what? If you can do it through payroll deduction, it's a start. Now, it's not going to help everybody, but for those who choose to take advantage of this opportunity, it's there.
So let's get into the lieutenant governor position, which is the ex officio president of the Missouri Senate. Why do you believe you are qualified for this job?
Well, you know, I've been here in the legislature. And so sitting in the Senate is a little bit different than being over in the House, but there are some similarities. So I've got that legislative experience behind me. When I look at the statutory duties, when you sit on a lot of these boards and commissions, well, I already sit on one of those seats. I'm a tourism commissioner. I've had a chance to work with our current lieutenant governor in that position. And so I understand what that job entails. Several of the other boards that exist that the lieutenant governor sits on, I feel like I check off on a lot of those boxes. You know, for instance, when we talk about looking at the parents as teachers program. Well, I'm a retired school teacher. So's my wife, Therese, and my wife, Regina, that passed away 6 years ago. She was also a retired teacher. You know, come from a family of educators. And this is something that I could definitely advocate for. We also have a special health, psychological, and social needs of minority older individuals commission. Again, you know, my ethnicity, I have a Black father and a Japanese mother, grew up on Kansas City's east side. I think, you know, and being age 61, and of course, my wife, she is also a senior. Again, that checks off that box. I'd be advocating for myself, not to mention that the lieutenant governor is the official advocate for senior citizens in this state.
We're going to get into a lot of that. But first, you know, of the statewide offices, I think lieutenant governor can definitely be perceived as a position that isn't as exciting. Tell listeners and us why we're wrong.
Well, you know, you're right. It's not necessarily a sexy position because everybody seems to think that the lieutenant governor is someone who sits around and waits to become governor of the state. Well, you know, that's not part of my plan. I want to be an ambassador for the state of Missouri. That's what I see the lieutenant governor doing, is being an ambassador. You know, we talked about taking care of the needs of older citizens. We talked about the psychological needs of minority older individuals. We talked about a little bit about education, you know, tourism. The lieutenant governor is an ambassador overall. Right now, Missouri needs a visible lieutenant governor who is a person of goodwill. My legislative record of showing how I've stood up for people in our state, you know, how I've stood up for workers, how I have stood up for our transgender children. You know, I'm a teacher. I love kids, you know, all kids. You know, my own child was disabled. So I get it. You know, we need somebody who can help heal some of the divisions that are in our state. You know, you hear me talk about Missouri. Yeah, my teachers told me it was Missouri, but my daddy told me it was Missouri. So I'm going with my daddy. And, you know, we're a very regionalized state. And so you have to really kind of have an understanding of the differences in people like down in the Boot Hill. You know, a lot of those folks, they're influenced by folks out of Tennessee, you know, versus people in central Missouri versus folks that are in northwest Missouri. We're a very regionalized state, but make no mistake about it, we are one Missouri.
You know, you said that, you know, you weren't getting into the position, you know, to be next in line, but it is true that the lieutenant governor served next in line for the governorship. Right. And as recent history has proved, it's not an impossibility that you would serve as governor. Is that something you would be prepared for?
So currently I serve as the assistant minority leader in the Missouri House, which means I'm the number two Democrat. I sit behind Crystal Quaid. Now, in my time with Crystal Quaid and over the time that the course of my lifetime, I've always found myself in positions where I was always the number two person. And the thing that I always learned about a good number two is that you don't overshadow number one. But make no mistake about it, I've always been prepared to take over for the Democratic caucus should that situation had occur. The same will occur with the state of Missouri. Make no mistakes about it. The governor is the governor. But make no mistakes about it, I would be prepared to take the helm should that day come.
You know, as lieutenant governor, there would be times such as overseas trips, perhaps medical situations where you would be serving as acting governor. I believe Lieutenant Governor Kehoe has done this several times since Governor Parson came to office. How would you handle that type of situation? Because it has been kind of a fraught issue, especially when the lieutenant governor and governor are of different parties. So I'd be interested what your thought process would be behind that acting governor situation.
Yeah, well, good question, Jason. You know, my reputation in Jefferson City has always been one of level-headedness. You know, in situations like that, the first thing you do is you consult with folks, okay? You just don't make decisions on your own. You consult with people because you're doing what's in the best interest of the state. Now, there's been situations where our governor was out of state and an emergency had occurred. Now, I don't know what took place behind the doors, but, you know, it was handled accordingly. And I don't see any difference in the situation moving forward.
So let's talk about a legislative body which you're obviously familiar with, but you've never served in, and that's the Missouri Senate.
Sure.
There has been instances in recent history where there has been a Democratic lieutenant governor, Joe Maxwell, who has served when there's a Republican Senate. And I was not around when that happened. I was a college student, but I do recall reading articles about how Lieutenant Governor Maxwell definitely played a role in helping Democrats get a procedural edge. Would that be something that you would be focusing on over presiding over the Senate, or would you try to be as fair-minded as possible and, you know, not necessarily not call on Republicans just because you're a Democrat?
Well, you know, I've always been a fair-minded person. I believe that democracy works best when everybody gets to participate in it, okay? I've had speakers in the House that I thought were very fair when it came to debate. Now, of course, there will be issues that come up that perhaps you don't want that issue moving too fast. And so then, you know, political gamesmanship comes into play. But overall, people that are in the legislature and folks throughout Jefferson City know that I'm a fair-minded person and I don't play games. I do what's best for people. I'm not a politician. I'm a public servant.
Well, I think that it would be fair to say that there are three parties in the Missouri Senate. There are the normie Republicans, there are the Democrats, and there's the conservative/freedom caucus.
Sure.
So it's been divided between those factions, especially on the Republican side for a while. Is there anything you could do as lieutenant governor to like bring incredible unity to these factions, or is that just not going to happen because the nature of legislative democracy usually necessitates there being divisions over ideas or personalities?
So, you know, I've been very fortunate in my personal relationships with individuals. And that's the thing you have to remember is that in Jefferson City, this business is built on relationships with folks, okay? And I've gained trust with individuals down in Jefferson City. And the thing that I always look at are the things that bind us together rather than the things that divide us or separate us. You know, we're not always going to agree. Okay. For instance, I'll give you an example. When Governor Parson first became governor, I went to him and I told him, look, Governor Parson, I'm going to support you. And the reason why I'm going to support you is because in order for the state to be successful, you have to be successful. But I did tell him, I ain't always going to agree with you. Okay. And he understood that. But you see, Governor Parson and I, we agree on probably 85, 90% of things, but we know those 10 to 15% of things that we won't agree on. And that's fine because we know where we stand. And so you've got to try to build off of those type of things that you already know when you're dealing in relationships with people. You know, sometimes you don't go in there telling people, making demands. You just ask them, hey, what is it you're willing to do? What are you willing to do today? Okay, because I already know what you're not going to do, but tell me what you're going to do. And let's try to move forward from there.
You had mentioned this in Sarah's first question, but if you were elected, you would serve as the official elderly advocate for the state of Missouri and thus responsible for ensuring advocacy for and assistance to Missouri senior citizens. What do you interpret that to mean, and how would you specifically serve in this role?
Well, you know, right now, I think the number one issue that comes up with our seniors has to do with housing. Now, whether that's affordable housing, whether that's housing in elder care, or whether we're talking about your property taxes, okay? This is the issue that most senior citizens care about right now, you know? Now, in my district, I'm very big on PACE programs. PACE programs, they allow seniors to age gracefully at home. You know, nobody really wants to go to a nursing facility. They're more comfortable at home where they can be surrounded in a place where they are comfortable. They can be surrounded by friends and families who can come visit them. These are things that I'd like to advocate for. Sometimes, like I said, our needs are vastly ignored, and we have a growing senior population. And so we really need to be working with our seniors.
Is there much you feel like you would be able to do in this role without legislative cooperation?
Well, here's the whole thing. The lieutenant governor doesn't deal directly with legislation. Okay, so let's not make this thing too political. You heard me say, I want to be an ambassador for the state. Okay, an ambassador is not someone who's engaged so much in legislation, but someone who's there to demonstrate goodwill. Okay, and right now, you know, there's been a lot of chaos that has gone on in our state government. We're looking at folks that want to run for government, but they're telling you right off the bat, they're going to bring chaos with them. Look, folks out there, they're tired of this. That's why I ran, because I was tired of feeling like the people in my district were being ignored. And, you know, when I ran against a two-term incumbent. My opponent was well-funded, well-known, and I won that election with 65% of the vote. And after I won that election, no one even filed to run against me for the rest of my legislative career, because my constituency, they felt that I represented them very well. And so this is the show me state, Missouri. You know, let me show you what I'll do for you. Okay. My name's Richard Brown, Missouri. Okay. I'm here to show you what I can do for you.
In the House, you served on the Joint Committee on Public Retirement and the Pensions Committee. How does that experience translate into the work you would do here as the elderly advocate for Missouri?
So that goes around looking at retirement savings. You know, not everyone's fortunate to have those. So we want to try to take a look at what are the real needs of our seniors. For instance, I mentioned to you earlier about property taxes. You know, we passed some legislation last year that placed a cap on property taxes for our seniors. Okay, so that helps out. You know, there are other needs that seniors have when we talk about prescription medication. Okay, right now we know that the federal government has made changes. You know, now how will these changes affect people in Missouri? Let's take a look at that. But the soaring cost of prescription drugs, that's one of the things that cripple our seniors. You know, I get it. I had a daughter who had cerebral palsy. I was a single father. As you know, I was a school teacher. I was a single dad. I had a daughter with cerebral palsy and only got two paychecks a month. And one half of one of those paychecks went strictly for her anti-seizure medication. And so, you know, you have to make decisions about your lifestyle and daily choices when you're faced with cost of life-saving medication.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Representative Richard Brown, who is the Democratic candidate for Lieutenant Governor.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking with our guest, Representative Richard Brown. He is the Democrat running to be Missouri's next lieutenant governor. I want to talk about more responsibilities of lieutenant governor's office. So in addition to what we've already talked about, the lieutenant governor also serves on a lot of state boards and commissions. I'm just going to list off a few. You would be an advisor to the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education on early childhood education. You would serve on the Board of Public Buildings. You would serve as the chairman of the Missouri Senior RX Program and vice chairman of the Missouri Tourism Commission. That's only a fraction of the list. How would you balance, you know, your duties in the Senate and other things and serving on all of these boards?
So you're not necessarily on all these boards and commissions every day. You know, for instance, like the Tourism Commission, we have quarterly meetings. So you're able to balance out your workload, take priority for one situation over another. So I don't really see that as being something that would be beyond my skill set.
On the Board of Tourism, I mean, you said you already serve on that board. How would you promote Missouri?
Well, one of the things that I do is I travel the state. You know, Missouri is not a flyover state. This is a gorgeous state. And let me tell you, from campaigning, I can testify that this is a big state. There's a lot of highway in Missouri, okay? But, you know, I love to travel, just being an ambassador, being visible. People appreciate that. You know, I met a gentleman last year. He and his wife and some friends had came to Kansas City. I met him at Union Station. They were here for the Chiefs-Bengals game. And, you know, I went over and introduced myself to him as a tourism commissioner for the state of Missouri. Thanks for coming. Glad that you came to see the football game, whatnot. As we got to talking, and later I found out that this was a bigwig guy from Ohio. Had no idea. You know, I'm just being friendly. You know, I go to the golf tournaments in St. Louis, the Ascension Golf Tournament every year, just to be a goodwill ambassador to welcome people for coming, thanking them for being here. You know, how often do you have a tourism commissioner come up to you and thank you for coming to your state? Doesn't happen, but people, I find they enjoy that kind of personal recognition.
But before I get to the next question, what is your favorite city in Missouri besides Kansas City, St. Louis, or Columbia?
I'm going to get in trouble for this one because there's so many that I really like, but I love Chillicothe.
Ooh.
I really love Chillicothe, Missouri. Listen, the people in Chillicothe have reached out to me. They have kind of adopted me as their favorite adopted son. You know, my good friend, Senator Rusty Black, is from Chillicothe. And he and I, we got to work together to establish Sliced Bread Day in Chillicothe. It's a big deal for them. And, you know, the folks in Chillicothe, they made me the first Grand Marshal of the Sliced Bread Day Parade, and Senator Black still hasn't made the list yet. So he's kind of upset at me at that one. But, you know, thank you to the folks in Chillicothe. I feel so welcomed whenever I go up there. Hey, the Grand River Museum, Danny and the folks over there, hey, there's some wonderful people. They've got a AME Episcopal Church that is the oldest AME Episcopal Church north of the Missouri River that was refurbished, made into a museum dedicated to the Underground Railroad that people are welcome to. I've been there numerous times. So as you can tell, I've developed a relationship with folks in Chillicothe.
Yeah, it's a great Livingston County metropolis. I had a friend in college who was from there. I've never been there, but I have sliced bread every day, and I thank the good people of Chillicothe for that. But let's move on to a more broader question. Sarah listed off all the boards and commissions that the lieutenant governor serves on. Do you think that they serve on too many commissions? Should somebody else besides the lieutenant governor serve on these commissions?
So I've never been a lieutenant governor before, so I don't know. But, you know, I'm up for the challenge. As I look at these boards and the commissions, I'm very excited to have the opportunity, because here's the deal. A lot of these boards and commissions, they're made up of appointees. And, you know, when you're an appointee, you tend to just kind of go along with the status quo because you don't want to rock the boat. It's an honor to receive that appointment. And I get that. Now, in my case, I'm an elected official. So if I go in there and rock the boat a little bit, it's okay because I'm doing my job. You know, I want to advocate for what people really need. You know, child care. Why are we still fighting about this stuff in the state? I don't get it. You know, if we can provide child care for many of our parents out here, it would allow folks to go to work. It will, you know, raise their incomes. Why are we still fighting with this? I don't understand it. Why can't we fix how we pay our providers? You know, That was number one problem with childcare providers when I spoke with them as a state representative, was it just took too long to get reimbursed. You know, so you elect me as your lieutenant governor, you know, I get to go in and ask those questions that you asked. Like, why does it take me 3 hours to go through the DMV? Why does it take so long?
So you would also serve on the Missouri Housing Development Commission, which doles out low-income housing tax credits. Is this a commission that you believe elected officials should even have a seat on the table at? Because there has been lingering controversy over whether developers influence the elected officials too much in making decisions on where those tax credits go.
Well, I don't know about as far as influence, you know, by these developers. I'm certainly not influenced by anyone. I would love to sit on that board because I want to raise the number of affordable housing units in the state. And I want to find a way to get this done. You know, when I look at housing today, everything seems to be geared toward luxury living. You know, you got marble and granite and everything. Whatever happened to formica? Okay, whatever happened to laminate? Whatever happened to those materials where you can just have a basic starter home that folks can afford? When I look at rent out here, and here in Kansas City, my hometown, the city council about a year ago, they defined affordable housing as a one-bedroom apartment for two people at $1,800 a month. Folks, that ain't affordable. That's more than the house payment for a lot
I was going to say that is several hundred dollars more than my mortgage, my property taxes, and my insurance. So,
and can you understand why we're keeping people poor in this state? We got to do a better job of educating people about finances, about home ownership, about saving. Okay. And we have to be able to give them those tools to be able to do that. Like I try to do with the first time home buyer savings program, like with the multi-employer retirement program we got set up. At least give folks tools so that they can try to meet those ends.
Within the Missouri state budget, something that is under the lieutenant governor's budget is funding for the arts. How would you oversee that responsibility?
For our listeners, you know, I'm a school teacher. I'm a speech and drama teacher, actually, as far as one of my certifications. I have a great appreciation for the arts. You know, I think that they add to us as people, as to who we are. You know, I think that the arts have been ignored too long. And I'd like to put a little bit more emphasis on them. You know, I worked very closely with Kansas City Film Commission, the Missouri Film Commission, and a Republican representative to get those film tax credits passed in our state. My college degree is in broadcasting and film. And so, you know, there weren't very many opportunities in Missouri if you wanted to go into the film industry per se when I graduated. And so I saw this as a way of helping give young people in our state that are going through our film schools an opportunity to actually work in the industry by having those industries come to Missouri.
Yeah, what else would you do differently to advocate for arts in the state? You know, whether it is just increasing budgets, making sure that the legislature spends the allocated money on arts. You know, I'm just curious your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, when you talk about the arts, there are so many different segments of the arts, you know, whether we're talking about the visual arts, the performing arts, you know, I would just like to see these programs funded, you know, especially programs to engage young people. This is why our young people, some of them, I think as a teacher, they get in trouble because they don't have activity outside of the school day to, you know, release that energy, to release their creativity. You know, here in the cities, you know, kids, they release that creativity primarily through the art form of rap, you know, but I'd like to show them that there are other things, get kids involved in theatrics, you know, get them involved in some type of organized activity where they can learn more about the arts, such as painting. You know, kids, we always emphasize standardized test scores when we look at intelligence, but let me tell you something, intelligence comes in so many different ways. I've got kids that can play four or five different musical instruments. Now, you can't tell me that that's not intelligent. I got kids that speak three or four languages. Hey, that's intelligent. Now, maybe they can't speak English, but they're speaking three or four other languages, okay? So, you know, I think that when you invest in the arts, you're investing in people, and you're investing in that creativity, and it's the best of all people because you're bringing out the best in kids, especially.
So moving to kind of a broader look at the 2024 election, you were at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago earlier last month. Give us some of your key takeaways.
Number one, wow. Wow. I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that ever again. You know, when I went to the DNC, I was refreshed and ready to go, but wow, I mean, I was so energized from the speakers, the message that was given. And, you know, Kamala Harris, she's brought a renewed energy into American politics. Now, whether you love her or you hate her, this is what you got to understand. The whole dynamic of the national race has changed since she entered, and it has energized folks on both sides.
How do you think that Vice President Harris will do in Missouri? Is it possible she could do better than Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden?
You know, I think that the excitement level is there. I can't give a prediction because I'm not a numbers person. People always ask me about polling. I don't pay attention to those kind of things. But I can tell you, there's a lot of folks that are excited about her candidacy.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible that she could hold down her loss under 10%? And the reason I'm asking that is in 2012, Barack Obama lost the state by 9, but that was right. Not bad enough for other Democrats to lose statewide elections. Obviously, there were other factors at play, like Todd Akin, you know, imploding. But it does seem that if Trump wins the state by anywhere from 15 to 20 points, that's going to affect down ballot races. So what's your thought about that prospect?
Well, you know, I said earlier in our interview that anything can happen in an election. I'm just going to be hopeful that Kamala Harris does come out on top, you know, and at least has a strong showing in the state. If she has a strong showing, I know I'm going to have a strong showing. And so I'm very hopeful for that. But it's going to be a very interesting political year. You know, we used to be the bellwether state here in Missouri, and that changed a few years ago. But again, it's going to be a very interesting year now that she's gotten in and has changed the dynamic of the Democratic race.
Well, one area where Missouri could be a bellwether is Amendment 3, which is the new name we're going to be calling the abortion legalization measure from now until November. It's slated to go before voters this November. Why do you think Missourians will end up voting for this?
Yeah, it's, you know, women want their rights. Women want their rights. I think people want to make their own personal decisions when it comes to their family planning and family situation. Listen, I mentioned to you earlier in this program that I was father of a daughter who had cerebral palsy. And I don't talk about this very often. My daughter passed away when she was 15 and a half. But I want you to understand this, and I want the listeners to understand this as a man, as a father. The biggest fear that I had, because my daughter, she had the mental capacity of about a 3.5-year-old. My biggest fear was that somebody might rape or molest my daughter, okay? Now, the way that this law is written in that situation, I don't have any say in this. So now I've got a daughter who's mentally, you know, incapacitated. She's will be pregnant. I have to make her go through a pregnancy. And now I also have to raise a baby besides this disabled person. And I have no say in this. That ain't right. That's not right. Because I become a victim as well. And I'm a man. Okay? And I'm telling you this. See, this ain't just a woman's issue. It's about a family. And so I get that. You know, fortunately, I didn't have to go through something like that. But there are people who are going through that horror right now in this state, and they don't have a say. No, they're going to the polls to overturn this. Okay. You see, another situation I had in my personal life was after my daughter passed away, I got married. And wonderful lady, you know, and let's say if she had gotten pregnant, well, my wife, you know, in reality, she was diagnosed with cancer 2 years after we were married. Now, if my wife had been pregnant, now what choices do we have? Because, you know, the chemotherapy is going to kill the baby. So I think the most humane thing to do is you're supposed to maybe have an abortion or, you know, but the doctors know about that stuff. See, I'm just an everyday guy. I don't know about that stuff. The doctor does. The doctor was trained, and that's who I have to trust in this situation. But the way the law is written, we don't have a choice. So people are going to the poll to say, no, I want that right, because even right now, for those folks out there that they want a child, but because of the new rulings on IVF, okay, you know, you have to go through a selection process. You're going to have so many embryos, but you're only going to be able to harvest one, you know, what then? So it's a bigger issue than just killing babies, because that's not what this is about. Okay, it ain't about killing babies. You know, it's about making these realistic, hard choices that are sometimes hard to talk about, that people don't care to talk about in public. But when they go into that polling place, I guarantee you in Missouri, we're going to pass this.
How much of an impact do you think this measure will have on down ballot contests like the lieutenant governor's race?
Well, I think, again, people are going to be looking at folks that will be in office who will protect that right. Okay, we saw what happened here in Missouri when folks said they did not want the state to be a right-to-work state. Then legislature tried to change that. Okay, we saw what happened when Missouri said we wanted Medicaid expanded. You know, Crystal Quaid and I, we were part of that lawsuit to make sure that we got that money. Okay, so you want to make sure when you vote this November, if you're voting to pass for your abortion rights in this state, that you're also voting for people who will protect it and honor your vote.
There is some consensus that Democrat Crystal Quaid, who is the House Minority Leader, and she is also the nominee for the Democrats for governor, that she might be the underdog against Republican candidate Mike Kehoe, who is the lieutenant governor. He's running for governor, perhaps because Kehoe could appeal to some more moderate and conservative Democrats. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, there are two fine candidates in the race. I have a relationship with both. It goes without saying I'm Crystal Quaid's right-hand man, and I mentioned earlier that I serve on the Tourism Commission with Kehoe. You know, he has a lot more money and a lot more endorsements, but I will say this, that money endorsements don't always win elections, okay? I've shown that in elections that I've been in, but of course, I've never had to go outside the I-435 corridor to get those votes. But again, Crystal Quaid is a very qualified leader. I have the pleasure of working directly with her for 4 years and being her colleague for the last eight. So don't count her out. Okay. Don't count her out. Not to mention we have abortion on the ballot. And I think that women will make a difference. Okay. A woman on that ballot will make a difference. We got a woman running for president.
Kind of going on a Senate scale, Democrat Lucas Coons has been able to keep up or surpass Republican Josh Hawley in fundraising. But as of now, it's unclear whether national Democrats will target Missouri, which is often crucial to unlock resources and staffers in Senate races. What is the case for the national Democrats to care about the Missouri Senate race?
Well, again, they want to keep the number of seats in Washington, D.C. So, of course, that's always going to be important. But, you know, I pretty much stay focused on my own race because to me, that's the race that matters to me the most, is becoming lieutenant governor and serving the people. The people of Missouri, they have an opportunity to look at the various candidates and make up their own mind as to who they want to vote for and who they want to support. But again, that's going to be a hotly contested race here in Missouri. We're just getting started. And like I said, we got about 67 days to go.
All right. Well, Representative, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to talk to us. That is all for our show for now. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can follow all of our work at stlpr.org, which includes not only our episodes of Politically Speaking, but our politics coverage as well. And Representative Brown, where can people find you on the internet and about your candidacy where you want to be found?
Well, you can find me at richardbrown2024.com. That's my website. Go there. You can learn more about my campaign. And hey, there's a big red button there that says donate. Don't be scared to press it.
All right. Until next time. So long.
Politically Speaking is produced by Jason Rosenbaum, Rachel Lippman, and me, Sarah Kellogg. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.